When you go to a retail shop or order wine online, are you buying the same bottles as the last time? In this episode, we speak to a sommelier and wine expert who gives you exercises, tools, and words to learn what wines you like, why you like them, and how to explain what you like so you can branch out and explore new wines outside your comfort zone. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a wine industry professional since 1996, giving you insider tips to make the right wine decisions. Today, our guest is Sarah Tracy of The Lush Life. Sarah is a certified sommelier. She's been a wine director at some of New York City's top restaurants. Again, founder of The Lush Life, wine columnist for Martha Stewart Living. She's written for Oprah Magazine, The Food Network, Refinery 29, Forbes, Town & Country. She's been on TV, and now she has finally reached the zenith of her career and is joining us on Inside Wine Podcast. So welcome, Sarah, and thank you so much.
What an intro. Wow. I was even impressed.
Yeah, well, you're an impressive individual, I have to say.
Well, it's so fun to be on with you today. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. So, Sarah, you started your career as a sommelier in the restaurant industry. You spent a lot of time working the floor of restaurants, talking to customers, and you have a certification from the Court of Master Sommeliers, which is a little more difficult than getting a driver's license, I would imagine, right?
Slightly different. And I actually will do a slight amendment to what you just said. I did not start my career as a sommelier. I actually started my career as a spit bucket rinser and emptier.
Oh!
And a glassware polisher. So I think that's really important to share if anyone out there is thinking about a career in wine, that it takes a while to build up to the level where you're a wine director or even getting that shiny pin from the court. And I really went from the bottom up, and I'm so grateful every single day that I had so much experience emptying spit buckets, because it really provided that foundation of having to learn every aspect of the industry. And when people ask me for advice on how to get started, I always say, don't be afraid to do the dirty work, the messy work, you know, go and volunteer, work a harvest somewhere, polish some glasses, and just kind of see what you pick up along the way.
Wow. So start at spit buckets is what you're saying.
You know, there's no shame in rinsing out some spit buckets is all I'm saying at the end of the day.
And did you actually put that on your resume for when you did go for sommelier?
I think that I was always pretty open about my humble beginnings in wine. I definitely, my family was not into wine. I never took trips to Napa as a kid or anything like that. So I really was starting from pretty much zero wine knowledge. And I think it's kind of cool to share that if you happen to get a job interview for a sommelier role, to let them know that, you know, I got some great wine advice from a wonderful sommelier and a dear friend of mine, Jeff Porter. He was one of my first bosses. And he said, when you're a sommelier, be prepared. You're going to be refilling way more water glasses than wine glasses. And I thought that was the best advice, because it's so true. When you're working on the restaurant floor, it really is about that teamwork. You're refilling water glasses. You are bussing tables. And to be honest, Joe, when I was in a position to hire sommeliers on my team, when I made it to that wine director level, that was always one of the first things I looked for. Is this person going to be cool in the dish pit? If the dishwasher calls out that day, can I trust them that they're not above that? And I think in the service industry, it's important to have people that are hard workers.
You know, I'm really glad that you touched on all this and corrected me, because I do think it makes it a lot easier for the listener to kind of like feel better about themselves, because I do think wine is so confusing and it's so intimidating. And just to know that you were there at that level at some point and you weren't afraid to do the dirty work to learn about wine. And I think it makes it a lot less intimidating to talk to someone like you, because you're not like flying high and above in the clouds because you know the difference between Aleonico and Aleatico or something like that. So I really appreciate you bringing up that part of your background. I think it's really important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you had a lot of experience at restaurants, and that kind of led you to doing what you're doing now with The Lush Life. Why don't you tell the listener a little bit about what you're doing right now with The Lush Life?
Yeah. So when I was working in restaurants, this was back in 2014, so ancient history now, I was learning so much about wine every day. I was, again, the spit bucket emptier time of my life. I worked at a local winery and we hosted winemakers from all over the world that would come and host their own wine events and dinners. And I was always really a fly on the wall, picking up so much info, just soaking it up like a sponge. And at the same time, studying for my exams with the court, because I knew that I didn't want to stay at a spit bucket emptier forever. At some point, right. I wanted to step up and start selling wine and serving it. And so I was undergoing that process and just learning so much. And I was having a great time at dinner parties, just sharing like little tidbits of the wine info I was learning with my friends. And they were all so intrigued by this like easy, accessible wine info, just like smart tips that I would share with them. And I realized that they hadn't really heard much of this stuff, because at that time, really the only place to learn it was to be online and on Wine Spectator and Wine Advocate. And it, that type of wine media didn't really resonate with my peer group.
Yeah, those are tough.
Yeah, a lot of the point scores and the evaluations of these high-end collector wines, you know, my friends wanted to know, okay, I got a screw cap bottle of rosé that was $12.99. Like, what kind of cheese should I get with it? They really wanted more brass tacks, down-to-earth wine info. And I wasn't finding much online in that whole realm that was more lifestyle tips around wine. And so I said, okay, I'm just going to start this blog. I'm going to do it for all of my friends, and it'll just be a fun way for me to share what I've been learning with wine and just give people some more tools in their arsenal to really feel welcomed into the world of wine and to be able to enjoy it. And so that was really just something I did on the side for fun for several years. And within 5 or 6 months of starting the blog, it started to get a lot of momentum pretty quickly. And I think that is exactly because it was a niche that was unexplored, and it was a need that wasn't really being met by anybody else. So it got a lot of momentum pretty quickly, and so many opportunities started to come from the blogging world. And I do think now all the time I see, you can take an online course to learn to be a blogger. You can get all these free ebooks to learn how to start a blog and how to grow an audience. And I didn't have any of those tools back then. There was not a cottage industry around this. I was really just doing it because I loved it, making it up as I went. And then I'll never forget, one day I just got an email from someone in the industry that said, we'd love to send you a bottle of wine for potential inclusion in your blog. And I was like, wait, what? People might send me free wine? Because I'm writing about wine? I couldn't even believe it. I did not know that was a thing. It was not part of my motivation for starting the blog. I was just really excited about that. And so again, little by little, I started making my name as a wine and lifestyle blogger, which eventually led to a column with Martha Stewart, which is kind of the best outcome I could have hoped for if I thought about bringing wine and lifestyle together. That's Martha is a pretty great place to be. So I got really lucky there.
Yeah, it all fits together. And that's why I'm so excited to have you on the show today, because you do break things down so easily. You can talk about wine in such an easy way to people and help them understand it. And there still is a big hole there. You know, you mentioned some of those big wine publications like Wine Spectator and Wine Advocate and those things. And there's definitely a place for those publications, but I feel like it goes over a lot of people's heads that a lot of people that would really like to learn a little bit more about wine, and it's just they can't connect at that level just yet. So they really need that level that you're giving them, the little bit more than beginner's course, I think. It's just amazing. And listener, if you haven't been to her site yet, thelushlife.xyz, like definitely check it out. And her Instagram, it's awesome. Awesome stuff there.
I am all about the shorthand with wine, Joe. Like giving people that shorthand, giving you some quick tips, some buzzwords, explaining little things. That's the beautiful thing. If you don't know a whole lot about wine, every little bit you learn is like exponentially beneficial in your wine drinking career. So it doesn't take a lot. That's the good news about wine. It doesn't take a lot of info to really catapult your knowledge.
Yeah. By the way, we're recording this in the middle of September of 2020. So we're in the middle of the pandemic, and a lot of people are not going into the stores anymore. They're ordering online. They're certainly not going into restaurants as often, if at all. So they're not getting the advice of a sommelier. What would you do to help someone kind of explore beyond the usual Chardonnay that they pick up or the usual Prosecco, whatever it is? Like, what kind of advice can you give people to kind of guide them toward wines that they'll like, but maybe they've never tried before, just so they can explore like maybe they did before this whole pandemic hit us?
Yeah, that's the unique thing about the world we're in now. People are really being left to their own devices to figure out their wine purchasing.
Yeah.
It used to be so easy when I first started blogging. I would walk to my neighborhood wine shop and they had a $12 and under table. And I would just pop in there. The staff was awesome. I knew that they had curated a great selection. And I would just pick like the wine with the coolest label off that table. And I would be done. How many people can relate to that? Like choosing a wine by the label is very real. And we see that in another sense, which is actually one of the first tips I give you. I really encourage people, and this is a tough habit to break, especially if you're buying wine online, to let go of the obsession with point scores.
Okay.
This to me is huge. I think they can be a good tool, but I also think a lot of people get very caught up. Well, if this wine didn't get a 95, then I'm not going to buy it. And if that wine critic, their palate doesn't line up with your own, that's not helpful. There are a lot of really beautifully made wines that I know are very high quality that I just don't really enjoy drinking. It's just not my palate. Some people just, maybe you're not a chocolate ice cream person. Chocolate ice cream is amazing to 95% of the world, but maybe that's not what you personally like. So I really try to give people exercises and tools that they can use to help them decipher their own palate and not just be depending on what Robert Parker or whoever said was a good wine. So the good news with this is that you have a fun homework assignment. It's just to taste as much wine as possible. And Joe, you touched on something that I also see a lot. People get very much in their wine rut. They're like, I know I like Malbec from Mendoza. That's what I drink.
Yeah.
And if that's all you ever try, you're missing out on a lot. Bringing it back to ice cream. If you've only ever tried vanilla, how do you know that you love Rocky Road and pistachio and strawberry? So I think that to try to diversify what you're tasting as much as possible. And one great way to do that, to be honest, is looking at those wines that are under $20. There's a lot of great examples of wine in that $15 to $20 range. And it's a pretty low risk investment, right? So you can stock up in a couple unknown bottles that are $16. And guess what? If you don't love them, you haven't dropped $80 at a restaurant on a wine that you don't know what you're looking at when you just pick something off the list. So
right.
I think that's a nice idea. And really my favorite thing to do is something that we call the industry called comparative tasting. Super fancy way to say you have two bottles, both open at the same time. They're each poured into a glass next to each other, and you can go back and forth between the two. When you taste a wine on its own, I often find it's in a little bit of a vacuum, and you might be like, okay, I think I like this. But when you taste it next to another wine that you adore, you're like, wow, I actually realize I don't really like this that much. I like that. So one thing I give as a homework assignment, well, that learn from me is very simple, elegant way to start is the old world versus new world comparative tasting.
Oh, okay.
And that's simply grabbing a bottle, let's say a Left Bank Bordeaux red, which is going to be based on the Cabernet Sauvignon grape, and then grabbing a bottle of California Cab and open them both and taste back and forth. The differences are pretty profound when you have them both in front of you, and you might really be drawn to the new world expression of that grape, or you might really be drawn to the old world. And if you keep repeating this, I find that you'll see a clear preference usually pop in there, even with white wines. If you try, for example, a Sauvignon Blanc from France, maybe from the Loire Valley, and then you try one from New Zealand, they're similar enough. They are based on the same grape after all, but they're so different in terms of their expression. And just by tasting them side by side, I find like that's a great way to go. And once you sort of get your head around that old world versus new world style, you're in business because when you go to a restaurant and you know that you prefer New World wines, you've automatically eliminated like half of the wine menu.
Right.
I'm all about like narrowing down your options as much as possible. And so I think that's a great thing to do, either Old World, New World, or the same grape variety from different parts of the world, or even the same grape variety made in a different style. So if you have a Chardonnay day and you have one oaked version and one unoaked version, so two different styles of the same grape, you might realize you're drawn to one more than the other. So I think really you just have to taste a lot and keep track of, to eloquently put it, like what rings your bell? Like what wines do you just light a fire in you in some way? And really you can't get that from reading a lot of articles. You really need to do it from sitting down with a glass in front of you and tasting.
Yeah. And just in case our listener doesn't know what we're talking about, Old World is generally wines from Europe and New World is just about everywhere else, more or less, just in general. I'm glad you brought up the varietal, the grape type comparison, because so often I talk to somebody and they'll say, oh yeah, I love Chardonnay. And I don't know what that means.
Exactly. You
know, like, because it can taste so different from so many different places. Like usually when people say they love Chardonnay, they usually mean oaky, buttery Chardonnay from California, just because that seems to be the most prevalent wine that we get in the United States. But to your point, like the Sauvignon Blancs, like if someone says, oh, I love Sauvignon Blanc, you might not love it if it's from New Zealand versus, like you said, France. So that's a really good, I like that tip for doing some comparisons.
Yeah. And on the same note, I mean, if you really want to get geeky with it, you can start a wine tasting journal or even a spreadsheet, which is what I have. And I just keep track of the wines I taste and I just look back at it and see if there's any trends of the wines that I enjoy more. It's really funny. Like sometimes people will do this and two wines that will seem to have not a lot in common, they're able to kind of dig deeper and say, actually, they do have more in common with my palate. You might look back at your spreadsheet and say, wow, I really like medium to lighter bodied reds that are low in alcohol, that have generous red fruit and a little bit of earth to them. That every single wine I've tried that fits that profile is for me. And that could apply to a Pinot Noir from the Willamette Valley in Oregon and also a Cru Beaujolais. You might like both. They wouldn't seem to have a lot in common, maybe on the surface. You might have a brand new winery in Oregon, a fifth generation family farmed wine from somewhere in rural Beaujolais. The winemaking practices might be different, but there might be enough in common that you're, again, kind of narrowing down things that you personally find appealing in wine.
Okay. What are some things that a person should look at or research if, you know, once they've hit on something that they like should they be looking at the label, at the alcohol level? Should they go online and Google it? Like what do you usually recommend?
I think going online is a great resource that we have now. It's pretty incredible. You can find out almost anything you want to about a wine by looking online. And oftentimes that's not even available on the label. We see this a lot with, for example, organic farming. If that's something that's important to you, we have a lot of producers in the world that are practicing organic. They don't have a certification.
Right.
And that's something that's really hard to know just by looking at the label. But then if you do a quick Google search, you learn that they're hand harvesting everything and they're only using native yeasts and they're not using any synthetic pesticides. It might not scream organic on the label, but you do your 3 minutes of Google research and you learn, okay, that wine has the things that are important to me. So labels can be really great. I find alcohol level to be helpful, but for me, it's like just one part of the picture. I tend to like, okay, personally, wines that have slightly lower alcohol content. That's something that appeals to me. So I'll see a wine and I'll say, oh, okay, this is 12.5%, 12%. I really enjoy wines in this range stylistically. I'm going to give this wine a chance. It's definitely one more thing you can look at.
Okay. And when you do start searching online, to your point, there is a lot of information that you can find, but it can also be a little overwhelming. So are there like certain things that a person should kind of like hone in on? Like, should they look for acidity? Should they look for some kind of winemaking method? Or
one tip that I love to give is become a fan of a certain winemaker. You know how chefs have fans? Like there are celebrity chefs and people sure. are like, I follow Jean-Georges or I follow Mario Batali or maybe not Mario anymore. But I think that what people need to kind of get their head around is that there are essentially two main aspects of creating a wine. The first is what Mother Nature does, right? The climate, the soils, the farming, all of the things we talk about when we talk about geography and geology and climate as it relates to wine. And then we have the human touch. What happens when the winemaker brings all that fruit into the winery and gets his hands on it? There's definitely a marketing buzzword that's like, the great wines are made in the vineyard. But if you've visited a few wineries, you know that's not exactly true. The winemakers have a lot to do with it. And if you gave a chef, let's say 10 chefs, you gave them the same basket of ingredients, they would come up with 10 totally different dishes, and some you would love and some you may not. I find the same thing to be true with winemakers. They're going to take that parcel of fruit, they're going to put their own style on it and their own stamp. And if you really love a wine that a certain winemaker is crafting, his style is like really aligned with your palate, find out what else he's up to. You'd be amazed. So many of these guys, like, they might be known for one wine, but they're consulting at 10 other wineries and they're mentoring all these other people. So you might want to check them out. Maybe you'll follow them on social media and see what wines they're drinking and opening. I feel like that's a fun exercise because sometimes, you know, regional tastings, you can have two wineries down the road from each other and they might be making pretty different wines. So while the region is obviously important in terms of the DNA of the wine, the style of the winemaker and what they do to create their finished flavor profile, I think is pretty individual. And so, yeah, become a fan of a winemaker. That's a very fun project.
That's really cool. You know, I had not really thought of it that way, but you talked about the whole chef thing. And the first thing that came into my mind was people who watch Iron Chef.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that there's that one ingredient, like, all right, here's five winemakers and they're all being given Pinot Noir. Go. Like,
yeah. And some of them you might adore. And then others you're like, eh. I mean, we've all been there in the industry. You know, I can't say I love every single Cabernet that comes out of Spring Mountain in Napa. A lot of it has to do with the winery, the winemaker, their style. And I think that's a fun way to look at it.
Yeah. So, okay, let's say now our listeners found a wine or two that now they've really enjoyed that they've never had before, thanks to doing some comparisons and finding a winemaker they like. How do they now, like, if they do actually get to talk to another person in their lifetime, because it seems like this pandemic is going on forever, or maybe there's going to be like a virtual chat on a online retail site. How can that person best express what it is that they like to drink? What kind of language can, like, how can you help a person kind of like, because that can be tough. Like for us in the industry, we have all these crazy descriptors for the different wines. You know, this wine's, I like wines that smell like tennis ball can and taste like, we've had some strange ones, but how can like the regular normal person kind of express themselves and describe what they like? Can you help empower them? Like, what is it that you do to help empower them that way?
Yes. So I will say that when you are starting to be a sommelier, they actually tell you, do not go to a table and start talking about cigar boxes, boysenberries, tarragon, like stay away from those really specific descriptors because those aren't universal. Like my cigar box might be your tobacco pipe from your grandfather. Who knows? You know, these are all highly subjective. And if I say blackberry and you say blackcurrant, we might actually be describing the same thing. So they tell us in the sommelier community, it's actually helped me a lot to practice this, is really to focus more on the building blocks of a wine and not so much those specific little quirky tennis ball can descriptors. So I have four I can give you right now. And maybe everyone listening should whip out their notebook and get a pen ready. But the four that I focus on the most, the first is the structure of the wine. So those are our two buddies, acid and tannin. So that is going to tell me a lot about your particular wine preference, how you feel about acid or acidity in wine. I can tell you right now, I've always loved salt and vinegar potato chips, super zesty vinaigrette dressings, really tart lemonade. That's always been kind of my jam. So I'm really drawn to higher acid flavors and sensations. That's how my palate's kind of calibrated. But for every zesty vinaigrette dressing person out there, there's also a ranch dressing lover. So kind of knowing, knowing for yourself, do you like that prickly, zesty, tingly sensation of biting into a lemon? Or do you prefer more smooth and mellow sensations? So if you're in column A, you like a higher acid wine, that's an excellent thing to be able to describe to your tasting room clerk or your online wine forum. Whether you like higher acid or lower acid, that's number one. Number two is the tannin. So tannin, if anyone at home isn't familiar with this, it's the compound that's found in lots of things in nature. In grapes, it's in the seeds, the stems, and the skins of the grapes, but you also see it in bark and other plants and things like that. But it's that sensation that makes your tongue feel kind of dry and sandpapery when you taste the wine. And certain grape varieties have a lot of natural tannin and certain ones have a lot less. So if you love a really, really strong cup of black tea, black tea has a ton of tannin. If you ever oversteeped your tea accidentally and you took a sip of it and your tongue is like totally dry, it like turned into like sandpaper, That would be tannin. If that's something you enjoy, you would want a wine that has more tannin presence. And you can find that in grape varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon, in Nebbiolo, in sometimes a Syrah. So I think that's a nice thing to know. Do you like higher tannin or lower tannin wines? The third is body. So the thickness of the wine. Do you like something that's light and pretty and nimble on the palate, or do you like a really lush, creamy, fully textured wine? Or do you like something in the middle? So body is a great thing. And again, when you do your wine tasting homework and you just taste a lot of wine and keep track of this stuff, you'll definitely see trends start to occur of what you enjoy. And then the number four for me is the fruit quality. There are wines that are very fruit driven, if you want to sound fancy, but that just means they're really fruity. They're very expressive of the fruit qualities that they have. And there are other wines that lead with more savory elements. If you prefer a red wine that might have like leather and tobacco or smell like an old book, or maybe it has a spicy note to it, black pepper, nutmegs, cloves, cinnamon, all of those things, you might be drawn to more savory styles of wine versus a wine that tastes like you're biting into a fresh cranberry. So if you can kind of decide, do I like lower high acid, lower high tannin, light or full bodied, and savory versus fruity, if you can rock those four, you're always going to find a wine you love.
That's awesome. This is really good advice. And this is the kind of homework that people will actually like to do, I think.
It's a lot more fun than like calculus, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And when people are doing this, when they go through and taste wines and kind of analyze them, I think it's something that you probably will want to point out too is how to actually taste wine. Because I think a lot of people, they kind of like drink wine like it's a cocktail. Like they just kind of gulp it down and don't really pay attention to all those things. So like any tips on like how to like slow down and pay attention, or like how to get all of those elements so that you can actually write them down and recognize them? Could you give us some tips on that?
Yeah, we call that attended tasting. So that's the first step, is just recognizing This kind of tasting exercise is its own whole thing. You want to turn off the laptop, turn off the Netflix, really focus on the wine in front of you. And I like to call attended tasting, we have this in common, we're both hugely into music, and I like to think of it as if I go to a party and I hear like a cool song that's on in the background of the conversations I'm having, I might like perk my head, like nod a couple times, be like, oh, that's cool, and then go back to my conversation. If I am sitting with my headphones on in a room with a couple candles lit and I'm really listening actively to a piece of music and I'm hearing the bass and the guitar and the drums and the lyrics and all of those things, it's such a fuller experience. So that's what we're going for when we take that time with wine to really immerse ourselves in it and to really focus on it. It's about getting all of your senses into the wine and not only just throwing it a little bit back in like a glug or a sip. So the first thing you want to do is take some time to just observe the wine, the colors, is there bubbles? Is it a clear, cloudy glass of wine? Can you roll it around and see those legs floating down the glass that can tell you if it's going to be a richer texture or something more light? So just take some time to look at it. That's really hard if you don't have a lot of patience, because everybody wants to just jump into the fun part, which is the tasting. But yep. You can tell a lot of wine just by looking at it, even how old it is. White wines will get darker in color as they age. Red wines will tend to lose their pigment. So they might go from a ruby red, brilliant, gorgeous tone to maybe a more brown or faded brick red kind of sepia color. So taking that time to look at the wine is the first step. And then you want to swirl it around and get some oxygen in there. That's really going to unlock all of those phenolic compounds that have been hibernating in the bottle with no access to oxygen. So the little swirl will kind of help release those aromas so you can smell it better. And my favorite part of wine tasting is absolutely the smell, the aroma. And a lot of people also skip over that step, but the majority of what we experience as flavor is actually coming from our olfactory system. It's like you can't really taste anything if you have a cold. You're not getting those aromas there. So really to want to take some time with those. And I learned a fun tip. If you have a glass of wine in front of you right now at home and you dare to do this, it's pretty great. But Joe, I don't even know if you knew this, because I just found out a couple weeks ago that most people have a dominant nostril.
What?
Yes.
Get out of here.
So if you stick your nose into a glass of wine and you block one nostril and you only smell from the one and then you do the other, you're going to find that you have a much stronger sense of smell from one nostril over the other. So that's kind of just a fun tip to give people. And also just to give you that permission to try stuff, look silly. Wine tasting, it's not brain surgery. It should be fun. And get in there, keep your mouth open while you're trying to smell also is a really good tip that's really feels very unnatural.
Oh, okay. That's another one.
It also makes it easier to smell the wine, weirdly, when your mouth is open. So These little tips I find just take a lot of that stiffness out of the wine tasting ritual, and you just want to have fun with it. Really get in there and explore. And then finally, the actual tasting is everyone's favorite, but I always encourage everyone to, instead of just sipping the wine, to really take it into your mouth, slurp it and swish it around a little bit, get it really covering your gums and the sides of your tongue. And what you're really looking for when you taste a wine should be thinking about not only the flavor, but also the texture. And what we are talking about in terms of the structural elements, the acid, the tannin, is it making your gums tingle? Is it making your mouth water? Is it drying out your tongue? Or are you feeling it up in your glands, kind of next to your ears? Like there's so many cool textural and structural things you feel in a wine. Tannin is not a flavor, it's a sensation. Same when we talk about the body of a wine, that creamy, rich feeling in your mouth. You want to notice those things and not just sip it back. So again, it's like putting headphones on your wine glass if you follow those steps.
Yeah, that's a good way to talk about it, actually. If you just want to listen to, like you said, you listen to music and you want to dance a little bit, or do you want to sit down and listen and hear all that other stuff? That's really good.
Yeah, and there's time for both. I don't always do an intended tasting every time I sit down with a glass of wine. Sometimes I just want to sip it and enjoy it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I feel like the one thing that a lot of people have a hard time with is the difference between tannins and acidity.
Yeah.
Because they're both sensations and they're like, oh, I feel like it's drying, but I don't they can't really get pinpoint if it's drying from the tannins or it's drying them out from the acidity. So maybe just really quickly touch on how a person can tell the difference between those two things.
Yeah. For me, the acid component is always that idea of waterworks. Your saliva glands, after you have acidic something in your mouth, should really be working overdrive. You should feel like a gush of saliva. That's probably not the most elegant way I could put it, but we're being real here. It's not romantic.
Not romantic at all.
You should feel a gush of saliva in your mouth when you have a high acid wine. And again, that kind of tingling, prickling feeling. Again, bite into a lemon. Remember what that feels like. Mm. And you will understand what it is like to have acidity in a wine.
Right.
The best way that tannin was explained to me in one of my courses when I first started learning about wine is it's like a cat's tongue.
Hmm.
You know how cat's tongues are rough?
Yeah.
If your tongue feels like a cat's tongue, that is tannin.
Okay.
Simplest way I can put it.
That's a good tip.
It's a good tip, right?
That's a good tip. Mm-hmm. That's very good.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. If you've never felt a cat's tongue, go find a friend with a cat.
Yeah, or just get a 200 grit sandpaper and run it over your tongue. It's about the same thing.
Exactly.
These are really good tips. I wanted to definitely get into the tannin and the acidity because that's something that is so crucial, I think, when you're trying to explain the kind of wine that you like.
Yeah, and again, just to drive that home that this is all a personal preference. You know, some people just hate the sensation of tannin. They would rather have anything than tannin. And there are wines for you. If you don't like tannin, you're going to go for lower tannin grapes like a Pinot Noir.
All right, Sarah, that's really good advice. I think that you've really given a lot of help to empower our listener. Because you've given so many great tips, this is just kind of like a tease to all of the really great information that you have that you can help people with. How can the listener connect with you after this episode and learn more from you?
I would love that. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm very active on there, Joe, as you mentioned, and I give tons of fun tips. Right now, we're doing lots of wine and cheese pairings. So if that's something you're interested in, you have to come see me. I'm working with Cheeses of Europe, and I'm showing how to pair all these cool artisan cheeses from France with wine, which is very, very fun. So on Instagram, I'm at thelushlife.xyz. And then the real meat and potatoes of what you can learn from me is actually on my website. And that is, I should plug this because Joe, you've actually done this. I have a quiz on my website where you can answer some quick questions and it will tell you what kind of wine personality you have. And also it'll give you 10 wine recommendations from me, specifically customized to your specific wine style. And so, and they all have shoppable links. You'll be able to get your shopping list, order some wine, and there are wines that I will personally guarantee you'll love. So that is thelushlife.xyz/quiz. So take the quiz. It's really fun.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I took the quiz and I can verify it is spot on. It turned out, said I'm a homebody. Yes, I am. Gave me all different wines that I absolutely would like, I'm sure, because I've seen a lot of them before and tasted them before. So yeah, absolutely head out there and take the quiz and get started on your wine exploration.
Yay.
Yay. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope this conversation has helped you understand what wines you like. If you enjoyed this episode, please tell a friend and make sure you hit the subscribe button so you get all future episodes the moment they are released. While you're waiting for that next episode, you can learn more about wine at wine365.com. There's something new there every day. Until next time, remember, wine is food. It's from a place. Enjoy it responsibly.